Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hi, hang out for just 1 second. Coming up this Friday on the After Party Podcast with me and Kimberly Johnson, it's part three, the final chapter of our special year-end shows about the 1980s. We're going year by year, talking about the news events, music, movies, pop culture, all the things from the 1980s. We already covered 1980 through 1985 in parts one and two, so this Friday, December 15th, it's going to be 1986 through 1989, the year I graduated from high school. But the only way you can listen is by subscribing to the After Party level or the Ultimate Edition level on our Patreon page, patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. So don't miss out. Again, go to bobseskashow.com or patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. Choose the After Party or Ultimate Edition levels, enter your information, and you're all set. Thank you so much for supporting this podcast, and now let the cartoons begin.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Hello, I'm Dr. Ruth Westheimer. I hope you have a Merry Christmas, and the Jewish holidays are around the same time, a very good Hanukkah, and a Happy New Year.
The Bob Seska Show.
You get the sense that Dr. Ruth forgot what Hanukkah was or what it's called? That's what I think about every time I hear that clip. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, December 12, 2023, and this is the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi there, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 1056 of the Biden-Harris administration, 328 days into the 24 presidential election. You can find me on Instagram and Threads, my handle there, TheBobSeska. Twitter, BobSeska_go, Spoutable Bob Seska, and our Patreon page is BobSeskaShow.com. And for the last time of the year, there's Buzz Burbank with the news.
You say Buzz Burbank.
Oh, wait a second.
That's not Buzz.
Merry Christmas.
Santa Claus
hello,
is here.
Hello. Buzz will be along shortly, but I wanted to stop by to ask Bob, Have you been a good boy this year?
Of course not. Are you kidding me? You should know that.
Your elf on the shelf, Tuvok, tells me you have been a good boy.
Definitely the name of my elf on the shelf. It's Tuvok,
I see Buzz headed down the hallway to share with us his favorite jokes of the year, so I'll be on my way.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Santa Claus. Safe travels this year. Yeah.
Just remember, Bob, just 12 more days and 13 more nights until the elves and I load up the sleigh with all the toys for all the boys and girls and go zooming around the big wide world.
Okay.
Merry
all right.
Christmas.
Good. Thank you so much, Santa. There he goes. Thank you.
Santa stopping by.
Yeah, there he is. It's amazing. And he's so enthusiastic. Yeah.
He is. He's a very
ready
jolly
to roll.
Old soul, you know.
Yeah.
Don't you know?
What's happening?
Yeah. Well, we do this, you know, every year, the last show of the year that you and I do together. You're very kind to allow me to present my 10 favorite jokes of the year. Jokes that we told all of the year. We've weeded out, we think, most of the bad ones. And so we're down to these would be the top 10 jokes in no particular order, I guess, other than for your own enjoyment. So
perfect.
They are.
All right, here we go.
First of all, I like this one. Kids had more fun than ever in the car this year, playing a new license plate game. The winner is whoever sees the most states where Trump's been indicted. The new license plate game.
Yeah.
An eighth grader from Florida won this year's spelling bee. I don't know why you're surprised. The word was de sanctimonious.
There's my favorite.
While campaigning in Iowa this year, Ron DeSantis autographed somebody's Bible. Mm-hmm. And you know, they still haven't been able to put out that fire.
from the lightning strike, sure.
Exactly. Yeah. We learned this year that Senator Lindsey Graham was very nearly charged in the Georgia election interference case. Mm. It's a story of Lindsey's life, isn't it? Always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
I forgot about that one. I love that.
Mitch McConnell froze up a couple of times on camera, you'll recall.
Yeah.
We were pretty worried about that blank stare of his. It was as if he'd drawn into a shell. 91-year-old Rupert Murdoch broke off his engagement to a 66-year-old woman. Murdoch apparently decided to play the field because he's not through sowing his wild dust. For the first time ever, there's now a pill to treat postpartum depression.
Yep.
And if it works, they're going to try to make one for women. That's for me. The Supreme Court, for the first time in history, established a code of ethics.
Yeah.
A copy of the new policy was immediately posted on Clarence Thomas's luxury RV. Dementia Trump said recently that when it came to prosecuting his enemies, quote, the genie is out of the box. He was referring, of course, to his favorite children's story, Three Blind Wolves. And finally, Michigan State University apologized after a picture of Adolf Hitler appeared on its video scoreboard. Aside from the terrible timing, the scoreboard showed Hitler leading at the half.
This weekend, another family holiday special comes to TV. It's Sing Along with Bitch and Have Yourself a Whiny Little Bitchmas. You'll hear all your holiday favorites like
Oh, tampon trees, Melania's designing. Oh, tampon trees, you look just like the Shining.
Yes, it's Whiny Little Bitchmas. And time to celebrate. You're sure to enjoy reliving holiday cheer.
With all we are excitement. La 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 la. Tis the season for indictment. La 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 la. This is the great big carrot. La 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 la. He should share us all with Jerry. La 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 la.
And don't forget that the reason for the season is treason. It's a joyous holiday.
We wish you would go to prison. Our spirits would then be risen. We wish you would go to prison for the rest of your years.
Gather your family around this weekend to sing along with Bitch and have yourself a whiny little bitchmas. Saturday on the Wrong Side of History Channel.
Yeah.
Rock it up, Mike. Just awesome.
Beautifully done.
Oh,
and,
man.
And you know, have you noticed how much nicer the White House looks for Christmas this year?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I don't know what the hell that was. What was it? I don't know, 4 years ago, something like that, with those
tampon
red
trees.
Scary, yes. Yeah, awful. It just looked like a bloody, bloody hellscape. And then naturally, yeah. And then, of course, Melania, encouraged by the success of that awful Christmas display, decided, hey, you know what? Let's turn the Rose Garden into an Eastern European concrete cemetery. That's
right.
Exactly what happened to that place. So you should not encourage Melania Trump's decorating instincts.
Well, it's what I like to look at it as a reminder of how much better off we are. And I don't mean to be sappy at the holidays. Forgive me for that.
Yeah.
I think we should take a minute and maybe be a little thankful for the fact that things are tremendously better than they were and looking very hopeful. I, as far as Bitchmas goes, I realize it's the season of Festivus. Festivus is upon us on December 23rd, as I recall.
Yeah.
And it is for the purpose of the airing of grievances. But I think we do a little too much of that. And I think it's because we've been conditioned to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm still seeing, and I got something today that said, this prosecution of Trump and his cronies, this is going nowhere. And I have proof.
Yes.
This is absolutely going. No, you don't. And if that's your opinion, you clearly don't have a clear perception of what's actually happening.
Yeah.
And so there's still a lot of, but we've been, as progressives, I think we've been sort of trained to react badly to everything, you know, to find the dark lining in every silver cloud. And it's really time for us to bust out of that, because things really have and are turning around, however slowly. They're turning around.
And, you know, in fact, I'm glad you brought that up, because right after the holiday break, we're going to go away for 2 weeks at the end of this week. And when we come back, one of our first guests in the new year is going to be Greg Sargent. And he's going to talk about why the fatalism around the possibility of Trump winning is overblown. Right.
Yep.
So that'll be really interesting. He wrote a piece about this, and we're going to get into it with Greg. And it's been a while since Greg's been on the show, so I'm glad
to
have him back.
He is one of my absolute favorite columnists at the Washington Post. I have a couple. The other is Jennifer Rubin, who I think does an amazing job.
Yeah.
But this guy, I followed Greg Sargent for so long, and what he's about to say, or what he says in his recent column, if you can find, go look for Greg Sargent's recent column on the Washington Post, you'll find this, that he'll be talking about on Bob's show after the first of the year. This is a very clear-eyed individual. This is a guy who knows all the bad stuff that you know.
He knows,
but he also has good evidence as to why we shouldn't let this get us down. The election is still a year away. The polls are still bullshit at this point.
Bullshit.
We're not there yet, and things are actually better than they appear, and people need to start seeing that.
Yeah, and I think we're starting to see it. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the show regarding the economy and people's perception of the economy. And in fact, that that Greg Sargent piece is called "Enough with All the Fatalism About a Trump Dictatorship." So we're going to talk about that. I believe, what was the date of that? Oh, yeah, that'll be January 3rd. It'll be right after we get back. So we're going to start the year out on an optimistic note, so that'll be fun. But in the meantime, before we get into more politics here and Jack Smith and the Supreme Court, we got to talk about this.
Yes.
The final episode of our podcast series on the After Party about the 80s is coming up this Friday. This past Friday, Kimberly and I talked about 1983, 84, 85. As we said, the most 80-ish of all the 80s years. And, oh, God, the music from 1984 that we featured on the show. Talk about setting the Wayback Machine for all of that. So, and we've been barely packing everything into an episode. I think we went like 20 minutes too long on Friday's episode to get just those 3 years into the casing of the show. And then coming up this Friday, I think it's going to be a four-hour podcast, because we're talking about 1986, 87, 88, and 89. So 4 years into one single episode of The After Party coming up this Friday. And so the details will be a little bit abbreviated. So we're not going to talk about, like, all of the music and all of the movies and everything we've been doing for previous years. Just can't. We'll try to get in as much as we can and make
the highlights.
Exactly. We're going to cover get to those 4 years, and then we're going to wrap it up for the year. And that'll be it for the After Party. Plus, you know what? While we're here, while we're talking about the show, we have some amazing best of episodes for our 2 week break. So when we go away, there will still be shows. And some of our favorite shows of 2023. Plus, I've got the Indie Christmas playlist coming up for our Patreon subscribers with all of your favorite indie recording artists. That drops this weekend, along with a video version as well. So there'll be an audio version of it, plus a video version that you can play on your TV if you're having a holiday party or get-together. Something silly that we're going to put up there for you.
I'll do that.
Patreon.com/Bob Seska Show to subscribe. The only way you can hear the 80s series, by the way, is if you subscribe to the After Party level for $10 a month. So go to BobSeskaShow.com or Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. Sign up for the After Party level, and then you'll be able to hear. You can also hear if you sign up to the Ultimate Edition level for $15 a month, and that'll also get you a commercial-free version of the free shows, etc. All the things that we offer on our Patreon page, that's waiting for you. Patreon.com/Bob Seska Show.
Yeah, I've been reading great things about the 80s series, and I've got to listen to the latest one because that's the period of time, the music that you were talking about in the mid-80s. Those were the songs we were playing on the radio when I was a Chicago DJ at that time.
I mean, those are the songs that, quite honestly, I learned to become a DJ, listening to those songs on the radio. And I talk about how in this period of time, 83, 84, 85, instead of actually buying the records at a record store, my parents would just get me a blank tape and say, okay, you just tape your songs off the radio, and that'll be a less expensive way to go. And you know what? At the time, I would grumble about it, but now looking back, that's how I learned to be a DJ. That's how I learned to talk up records right up to where the lyrics begin and all that stuff, but just from memorizing what the DJs were saying, listening to it over and over again. Yeah.
What's funny to me is that you and I are and Kimberly are of different generations. Yeah. You and Kimberly in sort of one, and me in another, and yet we have 80s music in common.
Yeah.
Because that's my favorite music also.
Well, it was your generation of DJs that I was listening to. And that's where I was learning. And then, of course, once I started interning for you in 1993, that's when I was really infused with the Buzz Burbank philosophy of broadcasting. And so that's
wow.
That's really seriously carried with me throughout. I mean,
friends, I apologize for that.
Well, when I was first in radio, I was doing newscasts at the top of every hour because I was working at a full-service AM radio station in Reading, Pennsylvania. And at the top of the hour, we always had to do a news report right up to the network news coming down from ABC. And so I was doing my best Buzz Burbank impression every time I would do a newscast, right up through the... And finally... That's what I was. I just did that.
Yeah, I don't know if you know. I invented that.
I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of those things that I'm so grateful for. Is that experience standing there behind you in the newsroom for the better part of a year.
I don't know what to say. Thank you. You're welcome. I'm sorry. But yes, I'm humbled. I know that much.
All right. So let's get into things here today because we've got a lot of news to cover here before we wrap up for the year.
Including good stuff.
You know what? In fact, while we're talking about programming notes, I should mention that tomorrow's guest is a big one. Tomorrow's guest is an actor from Star Trek Enterprise, the great John Billingsley, who played Dr. Phlox on Star Trek Enterprise, is going to be on the show tomorrow. Okay.
Yeah, I do. I liked him very much. I liked his character very much. I like his voice very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great guy. Great actor.
Yeah. So Jack Smith just completely outflanked Donald Trump with Supreme Court. This is such great news. I love this story because...
Who saw this coming? I did not see this coming. And it whizzed by us at the speed of light.
Yeah.
Jack Smith raced ahead of everyone here.
Well, the thing is, Jack Smith knew... I mean, and it's obvious to everybody if you really take a look at it. I mean, anyone who's been observing Donald Trump for any length of time, especially when he's in legal jeopardy, his entire move is to delay, delay, delay. And so he was going to use the Supreme Court in this case to continuously delay over the issue of presidential immunity.
Right. Those are the two. You just rang the two bells.
Yeah.
The two things Trump wanted, a delay and immunity, right?
Yeah. Right. And so as a consequence of that, Jack Smith just said, hey, you know what? I'm just going to do it myself. I'm going to take this directly to the Supreme Court, which is one of those things that happens.
It's rare.
On occasion. It's rare, but it's happened
very rare
before, right?
Yeah.
And so, he asked the court on Monday to rule on Trump's argument that he's immune from prosecution. And then the justices, according to the New York Times, agreed to fast track the first phase of the case. So Mr. Smith's request was unusual in two ways. He asked the justices to rule before an appeals court acted, and he urged them to move with exceptional speed.
Right. Now, we're all used to seeing the justice system move at a snail's pace.
Yeah.
And we're all very frustrated by that. And it's one of the most common things I hear is, why is this taking so long?
Mm-hmm.
The appeals court that otherwise would have handled this question of immunity, it took 11 and a half months to decide whether Trump was immune from a civil lawsuit, much less a criminal action. We don't have, Jack Smith feels, especially with an election coming, Jack Smith feels that we don't have 11 and a half months to wait for those jokers, that this needed to go directly to the Supreme Court. What he did, he went over their heads. He went around the Court of Appeals, and this is very unusual. It happened in Nixon's day, and Jack Smith is arguing this kind of urgency is attached to it. He said, I know this is an extraordinary request. These are extraordinary times, and what the court has done here is ruled that we will rule quickly on whether we will rule.
Yeah.
But even that quick response from the Supreme Court is astounding. And I guess they have, what, like 9 days or until sometime late next week for Trump's lawyers to respond to all this.
Right. And Lawrence Tribe was on with Lawrence last night, and he was saying that, you know, it would behoove Donald Trump to actually play along with this and speed up this process, because it's Donald Trump's constitutional rights that are being restricted right now. And so you would think that Donald Trump would want to get to a place where the Supreme Court is saying, hey, you know what? You're immune. It won't get to that place. And maybe Trump knows that. But at least what I think will happen here is, if they're smart, and God, I'm hearing myself say that, I'm going, you know what?
It's a coin toss.
Yeah, Donald Trump's going to make things worse for Donald Trump. He's going to try to delay this. But if he had a brain in his head, he would actually try to expedite this a little bit, because if it goes his way, that's it. Game over. He can't be prosecuted. But I don't think it's going to go that way.
It's,
will it?
It's, I don't know. I don't think it will. I think I'm predicting 7-2. I think Alito and Thomas will vote for Trump.
Yeah.
And the other seven, I think, believe it or not, will vote against him and vote to expedite this. Trump's not going to get his delay, and he's not going to get his immunity. The Supreme Court ruled on that in Nixon's day, and ruled that Nixon did not have immunity. If Nixon had had, if presidents have immunity, as Keith Olbermann asked this morning, then how is it possible that Nixon would ask for and get a pardon from Gerald Ford? Why would he need a pardon if he's immune? Well,
right.
Yeah. So next, you know, Supreme Court, next case. this is easier than it looks. And, you know, I don't know or care what Trump wants. I just know he's going to lose this.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he's arguing, among other things, is that this would be double jeopardy based on the impeachment process in Congress.
Right.
Which isn't a criminal proceeding.
No, it is not.
So it's not.
Double jeopardy does not apply because that did not go through the justice system. That did not go through the criminal justice system. It went through the legislature, which is a whole different branch of government.
Yes, it is. Let's see here. Jack Smith wrote in his filing, he said, the case presents a fundamental question at the heart of our democracy, whether a former president is absolutely immune from federal prosecution for crimes committed while in office, or is constitutionally protected from federal prosecution when he has been impeached but not convicted before the criminal proceedings begin. And by the way, I want to make sure that we're clear on this. There is a, I believe it's from the year 2000, there is a Department of Justice OLC memo that I was able to track down at some point a couple of years ago when I was still writing for Salon. And that OLC memo lays it all out that, yes, a president who was acquitted in the Senate on impeachment charges can be prosecuted for the same crime after he leaves office. That is an established OLC memo. And we remember from the Bill Barr era how closely held those OLC memos are. A lot of decisions are made within the Department of Justice based on those memos. And we saw Bill Barr make a lot of decisions based on those memos. So in this way, I think this particular OLC memo, if it applies at all, if it's actually used by Jack Smith, I think that will help his case significantly. Not that he necessarily needs help, because I think this is pretty pretty open and shut. And
everything Jack Smith has brought forward has been slam dunk. This guy does not mess around.
No.
I know a lot of our listeners realize that, know that, and appreciate that. I know there are a lot of people who haven't gotten the word yet. That guy's getting it done.
Yeah.
And he's not messing around. He is absolutely a force to be reckoned with, and he has the law and the evidence on his side. It would be one thing if he were some kind of blowhard, he was some kind of, you know, if he were showboating. No, that's not what's happening here. This guy has the goods.
Yes, he does. And he's got precedent behind him as far as this goes, because the court has done it before, once involving the Nixon tapes, the New York Times noted.
Exactly.
And more recently, the Supreme Court ruled by a 7-2 vote in Trump v. Vance in 2020 that Mr. Trump had no absolute right to block the release of his financial records in a criminal investigation. So that particular ruling by this court.
Right.
This is the portend of, I think, how they're going to rule on. And as you even said, 7-2. So that's a pretty good prediction.
Yeah, I think that's what it'll be again. And they've set a precedent here. They've certainly signaled their intentions, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's the big thing. Right. And it goes like this. If the Supreme Court rules in favor of Donald Trump, the power of presidential immunity would immediately be applied to Joe Biden as well. allowing this current president to do whatever he wants without fear of prosecution. And by the way, he could pardon his accomplices. So he can do this anyway, but he could pardon his accomplices in those actions. So Joe Biden could, without any due process whatsoever, arrest and imprison Donald Trump if he wanted to, and then pardon everyone who was involved in that endeavor. Based on this ruling, I mean, it gives absolute power to the president. And as I say with a lot of these sorts of things, the door swings both ways. It doesn't just apply to Republican presidents. It applies to the current Democratic president as well.
Right.
So this goddamn idiot, Donald Trump, is risking that eventuality.
Well, that's
funny. Yes, that could actually. And we know that Joe Biden obviously wouldn't operate outside the law like that. But it's the idea of it. It's the idea he could, you know?
No, it's actually brilliant that you bring this up, because even though neither one of us think it's going to go that way, don't you think that at least one of the Supreme Court justices has this has crossed their minds? Don't you think this has occurred to one of them as well? The precedent this sets and how much sense or not this makes, Yeah, that's a legitimate thing you bring up there. If they were to rule in that way, it would mean Joe Biden could go nuts, and I think that's a good reminder to frightened conservatives.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I don't think it's going to end up going that way.
Well, here's one thing that Joe Biden could do, given absolute immunity. He could arrest Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito if he wanted to. I mean, these are all things.
Oh, man. The wrongs we could right. The places, as Dr. Seuss might say, the places we could go.
Yeah.
The wrongs we could right. The things we could do if we had that. But, then what happens after that? Then we start abusing the power.
Yeah.
So it's not how this democracy, this democratic republic is supposed to work.
No.
And I think the Supreme Court will keep it on track in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, the power that the Supreme Court would be bestowing upon the presidency would end the republic. That would be the end of democracy.
Could be the end of the Supreme Court, depending on an election.
Well, of course it could. I mean, that makes the president a dictator if the president is no longer bound by the rule of law. Right. And that's absolutely ridiculous. There is no way in hell that the Supreme Court's going to rule this way.
Maybe they'd let Biden be a dictator for just one day. Just day one.
Just one day, because that's all it takes, right?
Yeah, right.
And that's a bunch of bullshit, by the way, too. Oh, I'm just going to be dictator for one day. How would he then enforce the things he was dictating on day one if he just decided, okay, well, I'm no longer a dictator now?
You just made the best argument. No, thank you.
Yes.
That's it. Case closed.
But here's the thing. Naturally, Donald Trump said he was joking. That was it was a big joke. Like the whole thing where he was accidentally saying Obama instead of Biden during all those rallies. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a joke. I meant to do that. The Pee Wee Herman thing. I meant to do that. Well, he did it again with his, I want to be a dictator for just one day.
And then I think he has said it again since. I'd have to double check, but I caught wind of him saying a new version of it even after saying that's not what he said. So, and his camp is, and he's confused, you know, because he is anyway. But he's confused because his people, his campaign, they're going nuts running around telling people, stop talking about this dictator stuff.
Yeah.
And the problem is the guy who's talking about it is him.
Yeah.
So, we've got a, you know, they've got a problem there that only his only a zipper on his mouth can solve.
Yeah, yeah. So he said here on Truth Central?
Truth Central.
He said, fake news writer Peter Obama Baker of the failing New York Times, readership and subscriptions way down from the good old Trump years, whose claim to fame is that, quote, he will never write anything good about the great job President Trump did, unquote, just wrote in a major front page story that I want to be a dictator, but doesn't mention it. It was said in a joking manner and completed with, but only for a day because I'm going to close the border and drill, a much different attitude and meaning. That was all one sentence, by the way, just to be clear.
And then he turned around at like a rally or something, he was speaking to his base then publicly with a microphone, said that he would still do those things.
Yes, of course he would.
That's why he said he would do those things in the first place, closing the border, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know, on day one as a dictator. So he's still out there saying that's what he'll do. So, you know, there's confusion in the Trump campaign message.
And of course, Donald Trump is all about personal restraint, right?
Plays it safe, Bob. Always has played it safe.
Just Herculean powers of restraint coming from Donald Trump. No one's ever saying that. That's ridiculous.
Mr. Low Key, we call him.
Yeah, right. So that is that. We've got more from Donald Trump and his chickening out of the New York City fraud case here in a second, plus some tiny Trump sound about, this plays right into the dictator thing. Like he's extending his dictatorial powers to law enforcement. We're going to talk about that here in a bit.
Well, yeah. before we go away, do you have the rim shot handy?
I do.
Okay. Well, here, this is the only joke I wrote for today's show.
Okay.
I'm a little less worried about Trump becoming a dictator.
Yeah.
I hear he's having trouble growing that little mustache. Thank you. I see that's out of my system now.
Oh, man. You know what? We're going to talk about something. Speaking of little mustaches, we got to talk about something on the Shadow Docket portion of the show regarding young people, that 18 to 29 demo, and Holocaust denialism.
Yeah. And I might throw in a word about how they're not voting this year. Next year.
We will talk about that on the Shadow Docket portion of the show on our Patreon page, patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. Meantime, we have to talk about, there's more Jack Smith news, first of all. And second of all, we've got to talk about this horrendous Supreme Court decision in Texas regarding abortion and, of course, the ongoing story of Kate Cox and what's been happening there. And as far as I'm concerned, I hope Kate Cox has been invited to speak at the Democratic convention this summer. I'm just saying.
I hope she's well.
Yeah, yeah. Because this is an absolute absurdity, this entire thing. And it's not just the ruling itself. It's the fact that there needs to be a ruling at all. And so we're going to talk about that and a whole lot more coming up here on the last Tuesday show of 2023, back after these words.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius. Doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska.
Than your fourth finger and the one that's on the trigger. Can you forgive?
Oh yeah, Karma and the Killjoys. Wow. Yeah, it's a song called Amelia, one of my favorites from 2023.
Wow.
Such a great song, isn't it?
Oh man. Gwen Stefani immediately came to mind. That force, I love this.
Yeah, so good. Got a link in the description to support Karma and the Killjoys at BobSeska.com. Find this episode dated 12/12/23. Click that link. Scroll on down and you'll find links to support all the independent recording artists on today's show. Thank you. Thank you for listening.
That's rare.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's rare and exciting to hear a woman sing with that force. I love that.
Let's see. Where are we here? All right. So, Jack Smith's expert witnesses in the same case we were just talking about in the Judge Chutkan D.C. case.
Right. This is in which Trump is charged with trying on multiple levels illegally to overturn the results of the 2020 election. So that includes J6 and almost all related to it.
Yes. And so he's got some witnesses now who have a ton of cell phone data from January 6th and the days before January 6th, including cell phone data from Donald Trump's cell phone itself.
Right. White House cell phone. Yeah.
Yes. So on Monday, Smith filed a notice detailing evidence he'll be introducing at Trump's trial on charges of conspiracy, etc. The filing gives notice to the court that Smith plans to call three expert witnesses to testify about phone data from January 6th. Okay. Wow. So
that's huge. That's huge. This is a big day, big week.
Yeah. Expert number one will testify about location data on those cell phones. Mm-hmm. Expert one plotted the location history data for Google accounts and devices associated with the individuals who moved on January 6, 2021 from
the
an area
came from within the house.
Yeah, from an area at or near the ellipse to an area encompassing the United States Capitol building. The testimony will describe and explain the resulting graphical representations of that data and will aid the jury in understanding the movements of individuals toward the Capitol area during and after the defendant's speech at the ellipse. So I think what they're going to do is correlate the timing of Donald Trump saying, okay, we're going to go down to the Capitol and I'm going to join you. They're going to correlate that with the movement of the people at the ellipse from the ellipse to the Capitol building. So as to say, okay, well, here's Donald Trump saying we're going to go to the Capitol and then everyone goes to the Capitol, putting the onus squarely on Donald Trump for that movement. Right.
Right.
Expert number two will provide background on the first expert's testimony. The government expects that expert two will testify about the process of determining device location, the collection and use of location history data by Google LLC, and location history data produced in response to a search warrant and included in the graphical representation prepared by expert one. Her testimony will aid the jury in understanding the movements of individuals toward the Capitol area during and after the defendant's speech at the ellipse. So there's more background in terms of the technical side of how that data was ascertained.
Right.
The third witness is the big fucking deal in all of this, as Joe Biden would say. The third expert witness promises to introduce the most potentially explosive evidence. Expert three has knowledge, skill, experience, training, and education beyond the ordinary layperson regarding the analysis of cellular phone data, including the use of Twitter. And who was popular on Twitter at that time? Who could that be? And other applications on cell phones. The government expects that expert three will testify that he, she, one, extracted and processed data from the White House cell phones used by the defendant and one other individual, individual one. Number two, and by the way, we're talking about Donald Trump in number one there.
Right, of course.
Number two, reviewed and analyzed data on the defendant's phone and on individual one's phone, including analyzing images found on the phones and websites visited. You know what I thought of when I read that? I don't know this to be the case, Buzz, okay. but
right.
one of those things where someone wants to, let's say, commit tax fraud and right. like deceive the IRS about their tax liability for a particular year. And then the IRS goes and investigates and finds out that that person was researching on Google how you evade taxes. So right. it's one of those things. Like, maybe there's something in Donald Trump's cell phone that indicates motive and intention for these crimes that he's on the hook for in D.C.
Yeah, yeah, you very well could be right. I think it will also be used to show what he didn't do in response
yeah.
to the riot.
Yeah. yeah. And it could also have to do with things he planned to tweet or things he was DMing to other right. people using right.
yeah.
Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they already had, I believe, all the DMs. Yeah, they got complete access to his old Twitter account anyway, and they got yeah. all the DMs and all the, you know, there's something else. There's some way you can post things that don't get publicly seen. There's another place to store that stuff. I don't remember what
drafts.
It is now.
You can use the drafts folder. Thank you. Yeah,
exactly.
yeah. That was David
yeah.
Petraeus's thing. When David right, Petraeus yeah, was having that affair, he was using drafts, yeah.
Using the drafts folder, using DMs, those kinds of things. Yeah. Well, they have all that already. So yeah. this cell phone data is just icing on the cake, really. Very, very delicious icing at that.
Yeah, yeah. So, as I said, number two, reviewed and analyzed data on the defendant's phone and on individual right. one's phone.
Right.
Number three, determined the usage of these phones throughout the post-election period, including on and around January 6, 2021. You know, there may be something in Donald Trump's, whether it's his DMs on Twitter and the draft thing or somewhere else on his cell phone, that indicates that he knew he lost the election and may also indicate his hand in ordering people like Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani and the other co-conspirators to do things like the Coffee County infiltration and so forth.
Right, right.
So this could be highly revealing and on the record, on an indelible record carried by corporations like Twitter and Google and so forth, right?
Yeah. Oh, just to have the data from, say, November 1st to February 1st,
yeah.
that would seem to provide everything you'd need.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, number four, specifically identified the periods of time during which the defendant's phone was unlocked and the Twitter application was open on January 6th.
Constantly.
Yeah, yeah. So
never closed it, yeah.
Right. I think this may have to do with whether or not Donald Trump was wanting to encourage the insurrectionists or to get them to stop doing what they were doing. And I think this will show that Donald Trump was encouraging and motivated to keep those insurrectionists going and going and going.
It was flattery to him.
Yeah. And who the hell knows? I mean, there could be right. something in there regarding Mike Pence and the attempted assassination yes. of Mike Pence. You know, all kinds of revealing information regarding motive. And I think that's going to be the key in all of this. Did Donald Trump really want this mob to overthrow the election? And I think the case that Jack Smith is making is, yeah, and here's proof from his phone, for God's sake, and individual one's phone as well.
Pretty nice fly on your head, Mike Pence. Be a shame if anything happened to it.
And right? That's one of the most insane aspects of this entire thing is that...
Isn't it? Did you ever think that you'd be saying these words?
Yeah, that Donald Trump legitimately wanted his vice president to be executed.
Yeah, he wouldn't mind.
Yeah, of course, you'd be totally into it.
Yeah, right.
Because that was the whole thing behind January 6th. Because even if Donald Trump, and I believe Donald Trump was directly involved in the planning and execution of January 6th. However, let's say, just for the sake of argument, that he wasn't, and it just spontaneously happened, driven by the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and their plans to do something on January 6th.
Yeah.
And again, I'm hypothesizing. Let's say it was out of his control.
Yeah.
He knew that whatever chaos was being stirred up from the moment that first insurrectionists broke through the barricades, on January 6th. He knew that the end result could significantly benefit him.
Sure.
So therefore, he did not want to stop it. And this is, again, this is me hypothesizing that, well, maybe he didn't have anything to do with the planning of it, which he did. But if he didn't, he...
Either way, he got what he wanted. And those are practically the words Jack Smith has argued so far to the court, is that Trump's people did. And you can do this. This is allowed. This is under the federal rules of evidence. I think I said this before. You're allowed to say things outside of the crime period. So something Trump said well before the period of this J6 crime, mm-hmm. or something he has said since the commission of the J6, those can be introduced as evidence. And Jack Smith has argued that under rightfully so under the federal rules of evidence that by Trump embracing the Proud Boys, they're appraising their prison choir. That by doing that, Trump is admitting that those rioters, those Proud Boys who were in prison for doing what they did exactly what he wanted them to do. That his embrace of them proves they did what he wanted them to do.
Yeah.
Next case, Your Honor.
Yeah, remember the two big things I talk about over and over again, which is Trump always makes things worse for Trump. And the other thing is that these are the dumbest crooks in the history of dumb crooks.
Yes,
I'm very confident. I would say I'm extremely confident in the fact that this cell phone data has incriminating evidence that will show Donald Trump's motives and intentions on and before January 6th.
Jack Smith wouldn't have it in his arsenal if it wasn't that important.
Well, yeah, there's that. There's the fact that Jack Smith is, he's a crackerjack prosecutor. I don't know.
He wouldn't suddenly have bothered with this.
Suddenly I'm in the 1940s, but you know what I mean. But the other thing is that Donald Trump's an idiot, and the people surrounding Donald Trump are idiots. Right. And so collectively, they were trying to overthrow the election. They were trying to stage a coup. And they were doing it in the dumbest way possible, showing a huge amount of evidence proving that that's what they wanted to do.
And for the purpose of underscoring, Jack Smith would not have bothered with this cell phone evidence if there wasn't something there.
That's right. So now we move on to the Texas Supreme Court and an outrage and atrocity here that has made this thought circulate in my head quite a bit lately, and obviously throughout, since the Dobbs decision was overturned. Uh-huh. And that thought is, Buzz, and we'll set it up this way, women in America would be well within their rights to absolutely revolt against what is going on right now, especially in Texas, where the Supreme Court there on Monday overturned a lower court allowing an abortion for a pregnant woman whose fetus was diagnosed with a fatal condition hours after her lawyers said that she had decided to leave Texas for the procedure in the face of the state's abortion ban. So
we win.
Yeah. The Texas Supreme Court basically said, no, you can't have an abortion based on your medical condition right now. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
And then Kate Cox, who's the woman in this case, decided to go and do it in a different state, which, by the way, opens her up for other kinds of legal jeopardy, bounty hunter law and all the rest of it.
Worth the fight.
Yeah. So she's
bless her for taking that on, although she really has no choice. She's talking about her own health here.
Yeah.
And a baby that will not survive.
Yeah.
This this ruling comes from old white Texas men who know nothing about pregnancy, women, or certainly nothing about medicine, making a medical decision overruling the advice of her doctor. This is the party that doesn't think government should be interfering in your personal life.
Yeah.
This is such an outrage, and I'm with you, Bob. I hope that, as with the Roe decision, that women rise up again. And women, I'm sorry, you have to. We know that we will be there with you again for this fight, but it is time to rise up against this cruel absurdity.
It really is. That's a great way to put it. Cruel absurdity. And the thing is, women are a majority in this country. And if women wanted to knock the whole thing down and change the way things are run, overturn the patriarchy, They actually have the Democratic power to be able to do that. Small D Democratic power to do that. Right. And so I think that is, first of all, well within their rights and something that really, quite honestly, needs to happen in the United States. I think this country needs to be run entirely by women. I think that it's about time for that. I mean,
this anger, this rage that women across the country are feeling about what Texas has just done. What Texas Republicans have just done. Gee, it'd be a shame if they were still that pissed off on Election Day.
Yeah, I know. And there's a lot of confidence that will certainly be the case. I think this next election,
Here we go again.
Yeah, the next half dozen to a dozen elections, national elections, will be driven by this issue.
You got the fence handy? Because here it is, Republicans once again peeing on the electric fence.
Yes, and you know you should never, ever, ever do that. Right.
Thank you.
So the Supreme Court in Texas ruled that the lower court made a mistake in ruling that the woman Kate Cox, who is more than 20 weeks pregnant, was entitled to a medical exception. In the 7-page ruling, Supreme Court found that Mrs. Cox's doctor, Damla Carson, quote, asked a court to pre-authorize the abortion, yet she could not, or at least did not, attest to the court that Ms. Cox's condition poses the risks the exceptions require. The ruling, which applied only to Ms. Cox's current pregnancy, suggests that the court would not be open to readings of the law that would expand the medical exception in Texas beyond all but the most serious cases. The fact that Ms. Cox decided to leave the state rather than wait for a ruling underscored the difficulty of seeking court permission for an abortion in the midst of a pregnancy. The legal authorization she obtained from the lower court was put on hold when Ken Paxton, the criminal state attorney general, appealed to the Texas Supreme Court. But uncertain of when a ruling would come, her lawyer said on Monday that she had decided to seek an abortion in a state where it is legal. Mm-hmm. So, and again, the details of the case itself, it's secondary to the awful reality that a woman has had to go before a panel where six of the nine justices are men, first of all, and beg for permission.
If she does not get this abortion, she is a candidate, certainly, to die of sepsis.
Yeah.
And so this is what Republicans are doing, sentencing women to death. It's so important to them that every baby be born, even though it'll die seconds or minutes or hours later.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to them that every baby be born, even if it kills the mother.
Yeah.
And this business, and we need to talk, if we can for a moment, about the word exceptions.
Yeah.
Never has there been such bullshit.
Yeah, I know.
Republicans have attached the word exceptions to their various abortion banning bills, and that's what they really are. And they include the word exceptions to make it acceptable to the voting public.
Yep.
As you can see, as we've just seen in the Texas judicial system, the exceptions are bullshit. The exceptions are trick language to, in the end, at any cost, prevent any woman for any reason from having an abortion. They say there are exceptions. The behavior of the Texas Supreme Court proves there are not. Women, everyone, rise up.
Yes, I'm so glad you brought that up, too, because we often end up playing the exceptions game.
Right.
Where Republicans will say, well, okay, we want to ban all abortions, including in cases of rape and incest, etc. Like, it's like we're arguing for the exceptions and then forgetting that the umbrella idea is to ban abortion.
Right. That's what it is at the heart of it.
Yeah, exactly. And what we should be arguing back is, forget the exceptions. We want abortion to be legal. This is health care for women who have who can have this medical condition that is life-threatening, irrespective of the possibility of some form of birth defect or legitimate threat to the life of the pregnant woman. The fact of the matter is, as soon as you get pregnant, that is a threat to your life. That is a potentially deadly medical condition that you should be able to opt out of. And this case is a great example of that. No woman should have to go to a panel of nine men, or I should say six men out of a panel of nine, and ask for permission to get a medical procedure that could ameliorate her death. Exactly.
F them. Seriously, F them. I can't. Yeah. It's unbelievable. And I think the job this week, I like to come up with little tasks for us all. And, this week for the Bob Seska Club members, I think what our job is to point that out whenever that comes up for discussion.
Yeah.
And as it does on the subject of abortion, exceptions are bullshit. Exceptions, the Texas Supreme Court just ruled that exceptions aren't.
Okay, so before we take a quick break, I want to talk about this real quick. I've got a tiny Trump clip here, and this plays into what we've been talking about for some time now, Project 2025, what Trump would do if he becomes president. And again, we're going to be talking about the upside, more positive, optimistic look at things with Greg Sargent after the new year. But in the meantime, I mean, obviously, I'm still deeply concerned that if Donald Trump wins, that's going to be it for democracy. And one of the things... One of the ways he's going to achieve that kind of dictatorial status is he's pledging to indemnify law enforcement from citizen lawsuits. This would give law enforcement unfettered power, similar to the kind of power Donald Trump wants. Donald Trump wants to be immune from prosecution. Well, he's offering that kind of immunity also to law enforcement.
Which means they don't have to protect their heads as they push them into the police cars.
Yeah. So Tiny Trump escaped from his cigar box, as he often does, and went out.
I don't know. I don't know how he gets out.
Yeah, dressed up in a teeny tiny tuxedo, I noticed, too.
Did you leave it unlocked? I don't know how he gets out.
You know what? He's clever. He can pick a lock. I think he's gotten to the point where, like the Velociraptors in Jurassic Park, he's learned to open doors.
He's slippery, see?
Yeah, yeah. He's a clever little bastard who's bitey as hell. Keep your fingers away. If you see Tiny Trump in the wild, keep your fingers away from his mouth. Is he biting you?
He was biting me, yes.
Okay, so here's Tiny Trump talking about how he wants to indemnify police. And I like the reaction from a bunch of people on Twitter saying that, oh, yeah, he must have just learned this word. Someone must have just whispered the word indemnify to him recently. Yeah, yeah, here we go.
We're going to do something that I will say is slightly controversial, but it shouldn't be. We are going to indemnify policemen and precincts and states and cities from being sued. We want them to do their job. Our police and law enforcement has to come back, and they want to come back, and they want to do their job, and we are going to indemnify them so they don't lose their wife, their family, their pension, and their job. We are going to indemnify policemen and law enforcement, and we're going to tell them to get out. We love you. Do your job. So...
Yeah, you get the sense that he really loves that word now. He said indemnify, what, a dozen times?
And that's exactly right. He just learned that word from somebody, and he's so excited to use it because it makes him sound smart, which he isn't, and he needs that cover.
Yeah, yeah. So let's use this in the form of a sentence, Buzz. Derek Chauvin. If Derek Chauvin had executed George Floyd, let's say 2 years from now, after Donald Trump becomes president, Derek Chauvin would have gotten away with it. Derek Chauvin would have gotten away with it and been immune from prosecution, I assume.
He would have been indemnified.
Indemnified. Yeah, by the way, did I mention indemnification? He's going to be indemnified. He wants to do this. He wants the cops to go out and do their job because they're indemnified.
What, I ask you, could go wrong?
No. Plus, of course, we know Donald Trump chickened out of testifying in the New York City fraud case. Big chicken.
We'll work on our chicken impressions over the holidays.
That was a half-assed chicken impression from both of us, I think. We just didn't really put any sort of...
It is the last show of the year, after all. Give us a break.
That's right. That's right. Well, I was hoping all the chicken talk on social media would have pulled some psychology with Trump. And he would have, you know what? Everyone's saying I'm chicken, so I'm going to go.
I'm sure it bothers him. I know that he knows of it, and I know that it bothers him. He just has to ignore it and pretend that it doesn't.
Well, the reason he didn't testify is because, obviously, he'd perjure himself, and he knows it. His legal representation, his back-of-the-phone-book lawyers know that he would perjure himself all over the place. Like, every answer would be another perjury charge.
I think his lawyers helped him see that the stakes are so high here, and he's going to lose anyway.
Yeah.
But I think his lawyers helped him see that the stakes are so high here and the risk is too great that, you know, even on your best behavior, even one wrong word can make things worse. So it's best if you don't.
Yeah.
And maybe that got through to him. In the end, I think he is going to lose his businesses here.
Yeah, I think that is obvious at this point. I don't think he realizes it. He doesn't realize that.
He doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Engoron has already decided. Yeah, that's it.
Right.
That's it for the Trump Organization. It's just the extent to which that's it for the Trump Organization.
Really, this was all decided by Engoron's clerk, as you know.
Right, of course. Well, you know, the other angle to this is not only, let's say he has to take the stand and he were to testify, he would perjure himself. But on the other hand, if he decided, okay, well, I'm under oath, I got to tell the truth, otherwise I'm going to be nabbed for perjury, a bunch of counts of perjury on top of everything else. He knows that he would have to tell the truth in that circumstance and just absolutely doesn't want to have those words come out of his mouth. He doesn't want to confess and confirm that he's a giant fraud.
Because of his cowardice, this may have been the one time he realized it was better to keep his mouth shut.
Yeah.
But it is, in the end, it's cowardice. It's a bad look. That's the problem here. I mean, yes, it would have been stupid risky for him to get up on the stand, but at the same time, not getting up on the stand sends a message of guilt.
Well, can you imagine the news reports after that testimony? Oh, yeah, Donald Trump admitted in court today that he is a gigantic fraud, and his entire business fortune, on top of the fact that his entire brand is built on him being a businessman, a successful businessman, that's all a fraud. That's based on crimes and fraud and all the rest of it. I don't think he's going to ever confirm that. And so I think that's another reason why he decided not to testify. It's the perjury half of this, and it's also the telling the truth half of this. Donald Trump is absolutely fucked. He is screwed. There is no way. When you are such a professional con man as Donald Trump is, there's no way out of these situations. He either continues the con or he tells the truth, and either way, he is screwed.
Well, he'll continue the con, but he'll do so without his businesses and at great cost to his personal fortune, or at least the fortunes of those who mortgage their homes to buy red hats.
Right, right. Well, as part of that con, speaking of Donald Trump as a con man, after the break here, I want to play this audio clip. It is our first bit of official AI propaganda for the 2024 election campaign season.
I can't do this. I really, despite my efforts to stay alive, before AI takes over, I need to be dead.
I know, I hear you.
I am dreading this so much, and now it's starting, and I don't want it to. Anyway, let's hear what they've done.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this in a second. They did a deep fake, an AI deep fake of a segment from Meet the Press, and it's been circulated by a senior advisor to the Donald Trump campaign. Not surprising that it would come from those guys. And so we'll play that clip here and just show to illustrate how nefarious this is. How this needs to be curtailed. This needs to be policed by social media platforms, especially platforms like TikTok and Twitter. I'm not holding my breath on that front, but you know what I mean. Okay. Plus, we've got some great news on the economy. That, too, all still to come here on today's show, back after these messages.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Seska plays more music.
All my friends say I'm crazy for taking you back again, but I can't find nobody that moves me quite the way you can. I don't want a regular situation. I don't want to hold you down, but I'm tired of using my imagination. Baby, I just want you now. I know you're a helicopter and you're gonna fly away one day.
God, you know, going back through all the music we played this year and hearing some of these songs again, I can't believe the caliber of recording artists we get to play here on the show. This is,
I was just about to say, you only play the good stuff.
This is Taylor Jules and a song called Helicopter that we debuted on the show this year. And such a great song.
Both of the songs you played today could be hits as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and this particular one, is it me or does this have a flavor of yacht rock? Has a little bit of that sound. Yeah,
it's got a little smoothness to it, yeah.
Yeah, so good. Again, Taylor Jules, Helicopter, link in the description under this episode at bobseska.com. Nice. Please support all of our indie recording artists. And as I said, we've got the Indie Christmas Playlist coming up for our Patreon subscribers. Yay. Sometime this weekend.
With Yule Log for you video file.
Yes. I'm rapidly going through my to-do list and knocking things off one at a time.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of artists and songs and Christmas, I have my own little Christmas playlist that I, you know, of classics and new stuff. And,
yeah.
And CeCe Grace's River was
came
up.
Oh, yeah.
It was so good to hear that. I know you'll be playing that this week, I would suspect.
Yeah, that is the last song we play every year. It was Chez's favorite Christmas song. Chez had his, or would have had his 54th birthday yesterday, and we still miss him terribly. And so one of the things we do to honor him is to play his favorite Christmas song at the end of the year, the last thing that we ever play. And that'll be at the very end of the final after party this Friday. So
I love it too.
We'll play the CeCe Grace version of that song, which is so beautiful.
So CeCe, if you're listening, I'm listening.
Yeah, and David Ferguson's cover of that song will appear on the Indie Christmas playlist.
Wonderful.
Love David and love that that version, that cover.
He's very good, you know.
Yes, he knows what he's doing with the music. So we have our first bit of AI propaganda, and it's being circulated by Trump's people. This is a little bit terrifying. Okay. You want to hear this thing? This is where they took a segment from Garrett Hake on Meet the Press Now.
Correct.
And turned it into a thing about the Republican debate. And this is being circulated by Donald Trump. And it's a weird way to approach it. Like, okay, well, here's the enemy of the people saying nasty things about Donald Trump's enemies. And here's how it all played out. It starts out normal, and I think it starts out with the actual audio from the segment, and then kind of smoothly transitions into the deepfake.
Okay, go ahead. Kill me.
You'll hear it. It's very, very obvious. Here we go.
And welcome to a special edition of Meet the Press Now, coming to you live from beautiful Miami, Florida, as we count down to the third Republican.
By the way, those audio dropouts, that wasn't part of the deepfake. That was just a glitch. So just to be clear.
Republican presidential debate hosted by NBC News. I'm Garrett Hake, live from our NBC News debate hall spin room, where we are just hours away from five Republican candidates taking the stage.
By the way, have I ever told you how much I hate the term spin room?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we're going to all go over to the lie room now. We're all going to go over there and listen to the candidates, people lying in public. How about that? And
we're going to debate after the debate. Yes.
We're going to euphemistically call it the spin room. Makes me gag. I fucking hate that so much. All right.
Tonight, it's arguably a game of survival as the field faces major questions about the state of their own campaigns and the state of this race, with frontrunner Donald Trump maintaining his commanding lead and once again skipping the contest. This is Ron DeSantis.
Okay, this is where we get into the deepfake part.
Okay.
Notice the smooth transition. I hear no difference.
I, Oh, really? I did hear a jump, but
there was a weird edit, but I hear no difference in terms of the quality of Garrett Hake's voice.
Okay, I'll listen again.
Okay, here we go.
Maintaining his commanding lead and once again skipping the contest.
There we go.
This is Ron DeSantis, an establishment rhino that wears insoles in his boots in order to look taller, and this is Nikki Haley. Nobody really gives a shit about Nikki Haley. This guy is probably just a stagehand. Who the...
Okay, I think he was talking about Chris Christie right there. This guy is probably a stagehand. So that's it.
This guy is probably just a stagehand. Who the fuck invited this guy? And this guy is probably just delivering pizzas. Anyway, nobody cares about these bullshit rhino debates, especially when you know that Donald Trump is going to kick some ass tonight.
And then it cuts to this. And video clips of Donald Trump doing that two-fisted jerk-off maneuver that he does.
See, I think Garrett Hake should be able to sue them for sue him or them for every penny they've got.
Yeah.
They do not have permission to use. I don't know. This is really spun off the rails, and this is one of the most frightening aspects of AI.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, imagine the ones that don't get caught. That actually brings up the next point in all this, is that NBC has demanded that Trump senior advisor and campaign official Chris LaCivita take the deepfake video down.
Yeah.
They're insisting. So in that case, I guess he's taking it down, right? No, it's still all over Twitter.
Yeah, and you can't, and it always will be. Yeah. It will always exist because that's the nature of the internet. You can't unring that bell.
Yeah.
And it's so frightening that although this quickly becomes obvious that this can't be real, it still sounds real, and that in itself is a reminder of what can be accomplished if they weren't being quite so silly.
Yep.
That's what's frightening about this. Not the fact that they made this, to them, funny little video. It's the fact that they could make it so real, and if they could do that with a bit, they can do that with disinformation.
Yeah, we all have to be super careful in terms of what we circulate, because there will also be some things that will appear on social media between now and the election that we start to circulate because it's favorable to us in some way, and it's actually a rat fuck. I mean, we got to be really super careful now.
We no longer live in a I've seen it with my own eyes world. Mm-hmm. You know, you can no longer trust what you hear, what you see. I mean, it hasn't gotten quite that bad yet, but it's starting, and this is evidence of that. This is evidence of how far and how frightening this can go.
Okay, so before we wrap up, one of my favorite things in the world to do is to listen to the audio or watch the clips themselves of Fox News and Fox Business reacting to great jobs numbers. And most often it's like Maria Bartiromo reacting on Fox Business. This is her show from Friday morning when the latest jobs numbers dropped. Here we go.
Overall, you got to look at this report as a big positive. We've got more jobs created than expected. Joe LaVorne, you've been saying this for a long time, saying that the economy is a lot stronger than anybody understands. Your reaction?
It takes a while. Everything Steve said makes complete sense. The numbers are good numbers, no question. The fact that the unemployment rate fell is good. It was because household employment was up over 700,000.
How about that shit? How about them apples?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, here's the thing. I just want to make sure we have the quotes right for the movie poster and all this.
Yes.
So, a big positive. More jobs created than expected. The economy is a lot stronger than anybody understands. The numbers are good numbers. That'd be Fox Business.
In other news, they're admitting it.
Yeah.
I mean, not only are those things true, but the other headline here is they're admitting it. And I think that's what you're saying and what you just demonstrated with that montage.
Yes.
But economist Paul Krugman has a piece in the New York Times this morning saying, watch what people do, not what they say about the economy. And it's the very thing. Remember me saying the parking lots are full at Best Buy and the parking lots full at the grocery store and at Costco? That's what I've been saying is people whine about the economy and they whine about the prices. And I've been reading some fascinating stuff on that, but they whine about the prices and then they turn around and spend.
Yep.
Like there's no end to the money. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this and with inflation falling, and with even Fox economists saying the economy is good. There's was another survey out this week that said people, public opinion is finally starting to turn around.
Yep.
That regular voters are starting to, their opinions of the economy have actually swung upward in over the last month or two.
Yeah.
And I think that we're turning that frown upside down, and the election is still a year away. So the polls don't mean nothing.
Yeah.
And that frown that we've been seeing about inflation may not be a factor either.
Right.
Because that is all changing. The facts have improved. The reporting has improved, and the public perception has improved, and we've still got time ahead of us while we point out this guy who wants to be a fascist on day one or maybe more.
Yeah. So just a few numbers here for you. 199,000 jobs added in November.
Right.
The unemployment rate went down by 0.2% to 3.7%.
That's fantastic. That's a great number.
And based on the numbers I looked up from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, is the pace of job creation is exceeding both the Clinton and Reagan eras. So if you look at Joe Biden's job creation record, the number of jobs created month over month over month, faster pace than the job creation under Bill Clinton and Ronald Reagan both. And finally, the University of Michigan said on Friday that its consumer sentiment index,
yeah, here it is,
jumped by 13% to 69.4. 69, dude. People became less worried about inflation and more optimistic about a number of issues.
Right.
That not only ended the downturn, but reversed the decline, returning the sentiment index to where it was in August. So that's all great fucking news.
Yeah. That is fantastic news. That is great news. And E.J. Dionne wrote in the Washington Post about Biden, and the key parts of Biden's advisor's plan is for him to acknowledge that prices are a problem and highlight what he's doing to bring them down, to focus less on the number of jobs created and more on the good wages those jobs are paying, an increase that's especially large for lower paid positions, which was the Trump voting base.
Yeah.
So I think the president has a plan for attacking this. And with all these other turnarounds and all the developments against Trump, I think things are looking pretty good as we approach the end of this year.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good, too. Obviously, that can turn around. I mean, at some point, I feel as though I'm going to meet that transition period where suddenly I become the don't get happy guy. But, you know, I think that's
always.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, but I mean, generally speaking, I'm feeling pretty optimistic. I still feel panicked and freaked out by the stakes for obvious reasons. And I continue to be disillusioned with my fellow voters in the United States for making some weird decisions. But
they're slow to catch on, I think.
Yeah. Well, generally speaking, I think we're moving in the right direction. And,
right.
You know, I've got my fingers crossed that women will turn out in massive numbers because of some of these atrocities that we've been seeing with abortion and on and on and on. I think young people are going to turn out as well.
And more men will be standing with you as well in that battle.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so that's it. That's it for 2023, at least the Tuesday show. We've got another show coming up tomorrow. Obviously, John Billingsley from Star Trek Enterprise.
Right.
Dr. Phlox is going to join us. And then we have our last Thursday show on Thursday.
Right.
And then the 80s part 3 on Friday.
Yay.
And then I just fall over in a giant heap. Just pass out on the floor, and that's it for me.
Yeah. Well, happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year to everybody.
Yes, same, same, same. And we've got best of shows throughout the two-week break and the Indie Christmas playlist. Lots of goodies for you to latch on to and listen to as you enjoy your holiday break, as I will be, as all of us will be here. Okay, meantime, Shadow Docket continues on our Patreon page. We keep on talking. We're going to talk about Buzz's annual Santa performance coming up. Plus the consequences of the Republican war on education and a whole lot more. Patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. See you over there. $5 a month for the Shadow Docket. Take care. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.